The handling of finances is one of the major emotional battlegrounds of any marriage. Lack of finances is seldom the issue. The root problem seems to be an unrealistic and immature view of money. Hi, I'm Rob West. That's a quote from David Augsburger's book, The Meaning of Money in Marriage. If money is a source of conflict in your relationship, stay tuned. We'll explain how you can restore peace. Then we'll take your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, ask any couple what causes the most stress in their marriage, and they'll probably say money. However, the problem isn't usually money itself, or even lack of money. No, financial tension in a marriage more often springs from bad attitudes, unrealistic expectations, and wrong assumptions about how to handle money. Part of the problem is that everything has a money angle. Most of our plans, desires, hopes, and dreams involve some kind of financial activity. That means you're constantly facing emotional questions about how to spend, save, borrow, earn, and give your money. And chances are, you and your spouse don't always agree about those things. On top of that, you have personality differences. Maybe he's a saver, she's a spender, or she loves yard sales, he prefers buying new, or he wants to borrow to buy a car now, and she wants to wait to pay cash. All this disagreeable disagreement can stem from childhood experiences or long-standing expectations or even misunderstandings about how finances really work. Put it all together, and it's a recipe for conflict. If you're married, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. There's another factor at work here in the matter of money and marriage. As we've said so often, our attitudes and actions relating to money are an indication of what's in our hearts. Sinful attitudes like greed, selfishness, anger, and resentment can affect how you feel about money and how you relate to your spouse about the family finances. Let me offer four recommendations that I hope will change the way you relate to your spouse about money. First, remember why God brought you together. Christian marriage is a testimony to the world of the love of Christ for His church. It's meant to be a picture of peace and godly unity. Christian marriage is also an opportunity for spiritual growth. Proverbs 27:17 puts it this way, "As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another." Being sharpened by your spouse in the area of finances can be uncomfortable, but it's worth the effort to work things out. That brings up my second recommendation, communicate. If you're out of sync about money matters in your household, it's time for a heart-to-heart talk about money. In Ephesians 4, 2, and 3, Paul writes, "Be completely humble and gentle, be patient, bearing with one another in love, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace." Here's how you do that. Set aside some uninterrupted time together. Confess your fear, selfishness, and resentment about money to the Lord and to each other. Ask Jesus to be Lord of your financial life. Ask Him to help you work towards unity in the area of money management. Commit to love each other in this area the way you promised to do on your wedding day. Above all, be patient with each other. These are very personal issues, but your relationship is more important. Make it a point to look for compromises and middle ground. If you're a spender and your spouse would rather save every penny, create a plan that allows for a bit of both. That brings us to my third recommendation for financial peace in marriage. Make a budget together. Your spending plan can allow each personality a little leeway, and a plan made now will take the pressure off both of you later when you're making financial decisions. My final recommendation is going to be very difficult for some couples. If you've been keeping your finances separate, now is the time to bring them together. Separate finances are a dangerous step towards disunity in your marriage. Many couples think separate finances will help them avoid fighting about their differences. But the fact is, this isn't his money and her money. It's not even your money together. It's God's money. Now, let me close with the passage on love that's so familiar from 1 Corinthians. It's the ultimate answer to financial conflict in marriage. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. All right, your calls are next. The number, 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and this is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Who is the best candidate to lead our world? That's the question so many have asked for thousands of years. We hear it today in politics, but it's a conversation that hasn't ever really ended. Who should be king? That was Israel's question. They wanted to be like the other nations and get a king for themselves, so they came to Samuel and asked. Samuel immediately began looking for the biggest, strongest man he could find. He found Saul, the tallest man in Benjamin. Then Saul failed, so Samuel began his search. The Lord told him, "I don't care about appearances, I look at the heart." We may look the part, but only Christ can equip us for his call. Spend more time with Jesus. Visit getanchored.com.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience, and she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries' biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
Abraham stands out as one of the greatest heroes in all of Scripture, not because of his perfect choices, but because of his unwavering faith. This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress begins a brand new study of the life of Abraham. As we examine this remarkable man, we'll discover what it truly means to walk by faith. Listen all this week to Pathway to Victory.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from LitePoint Portfolios, which seeks out family and faith-friendly investments for 401k and 403b plans, integrating faith values and fiduciary duty. LitePoint Portfolios offers retirement plans for a variety of organizations, such as businesses, nonprofits, and churches. And we're grateful for their sponsorship of the Faith and Finance program. More information is available at LitePointPortfolios.com.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Well, delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. This is the program where we apply the wisdom from God's Word, the principles and passages, the big themes we see in Scripture in the Old and New Testament, to the financial decisions and choices you're making today. Starting with the idea that God owns it all, and we're then stewards or managers of God's resources, and so we're charged with being found faithful, to live appropriately, give generously, and save, and set goals in line with our values and priorities as believers, not taking our cues from the world and getting caught up in the comparison trap, certainly not getting our hope fixated on the temporal, but trusting in God as our provider with an eternal perspective. That's our goal and objective on this program every day, but we also know you have very practical questions about your financial life, and so we'd like to tackle those together, whether it's living, giving, owing, or growing, whatever you need to do in your financial life today, we'd love to hear about it. The number to call is 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open for you to call right now, 800-525-7000. No matter where you're listening from, coast to coast, we'd love to hear from you. Let's begin today in Oregon. Betty, you'll be our first caller. Go right ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
Last week, you You had last week, I think it was Friday, you had a session on how you can retitle your home so that it can be bequeathed to your children upon your death, so that they get this stepped up basis, I think it is, you called it.
That's
and I'm
right.
just wondering, what's the name of that title? What is
Yes, very good. So the stepped-up basis works whenever you're inheriting an asset that has a capital gain associated with it. So it could be a stock, could be a piece of real estate. And as long as you receive that as a part of an inheritance, whether that's through a will or a transfer on death deed or even a trust, you're going to, as the beneficiary, enjoy that stepped-up cost basis, which just simply is a term that means the purchase price for establishing the cost basis for tax purposes is stepped up to the date of death. So let's say you buy it at one price, it appreciates dramatically throughout your lifetime, you then pass it on to an heir. The new cost basis is no longer what you paid for it, it stepped up to the market value of that asset, be it a stock or a piece of real estate, as of the date of death, such that if you're a beneficiary then turns around and sells it right away, there is no capital gain because essentially they're selling it for the market value, which is what the new cost basis is. So that's why we often will say to folks who want to pass on in particular a piece of property to an heir, don't retitle it in their name prior to your death, unless there's some other reason to do so, because they will retain your cost basis unless they inherit it. Now, how do we go about efficiently and effectively passing that property to that beneficiary? Well, that's where we have a couple of choices. You've got a basic will that can do that, but that's going to go through probate. That's going to be a part of the public record. It can take a little bit of time. There's some cost associated with it because the probate court is going to be involved, but it is an effective way to do it. Now, what you're talking about, Betty, and thanks for allowing me to share that background, is what we spoke about on Friday, and that is what's called a TOD deed. And TOD stands for transfer on death. It can also be referred to as a beneficiary deed. Now, this is not available in every state. It is available in Oregon, where you're located. So what would happen is you would create a TOD deed, and then you would file that deed based on that real property in your county. And that way, once that you filed that new deed with the county records office, then the property would go directly to your heirs without going through probate, and they would absolutely get that stepped up basis as a result. Does that make sense?
Yes, and thank you so much for that explanation again and the clarification. I just caught the tail of an end of it on Friday. I said, I've got to ask him about that. That's important. So thank you so much for being there.
Absolutely, Betty. God bless you, and we appreciate your call today. 800-525-7000. We've got some lines open today for your financial questions here on American Family Radio. We'd love to tackle whatever you're thinking about, talk through it together, apply biblical principles and ideas, and see if we can help you move forward with confidence. Again, 800-525-7000. Our team is standing by to take your calls. Before we head back to the phones, in the news today, baby boomers have too much of their money in stocks. What's that all about? Well, this is according to data released by Fidelity. They're defining boomers as folks 59 to 77 and reporting that more than a third of those surveyed have too much exposure to stocks, with allocations about 10% higher in equities than they should be, depending on their age. Now, you need to move money out of stocks and into fixed income securities as you near retirement, always keeping perhaps, and this is just a rule of thumb, it doesn't apply to everyone, but I would say probably keeping at least 20 to 30% of your assets in stocks, even, you know, in your 70s and 80s, as a hedge against inflation to provide some growth component to the portfolio. You wouldn't have to necessarily draw it down, especially if the market was down, but it is going to give you over time that growth component. But we shouldn't be highly concentrated in stocks in that season. The typical rule of thumb we used to use was 100, the number 100 minus your age, to get the stock portion for your portfolio. Well, if you were 70 years old, 100 minus 70 just simply means that you would have 30% in stocks, and the balance would be in fixed income investments. often that rule has been pushed out to 110 now because people are living longer. We're seeing life expectancy increase. And as we live longer, our money needs to last longer. Therefore, we need a little bit more allocation to stocks, again, in generalities. So if you take 110 minus your age, and again, your age 70 in my example, now we're looking at perhaps as much as 40% in stocks at age 70, but 60% in bonds. That's up to you ultimately between you and your advisor, or if you're managing your money yourself, to determine the right allocation. But this is just a good starting point, maybe a rule of thumb to consider as you begin that conversation. So at 70, somewhere between 30 and 40% in stocks. Now, here's the good news. Fixed income investments have been out of favor as the interest rates have been rising. 11 consecutive increases from the Federal Reserve. It's not happened very many times in history, and yet to fight inflation, that 9.1% inflation we experienced a little over a year ago, a 40-year high, they dramatically raised interest rates. That caused, during this season, while stocks were under pressure, a lot of pressure on bonds as well, and that's caused a lot of these bonds to really struggle. And so you're entering a period now where bonds, fixed income type investments are going to do a lot better. That's good news for those who are in a retirement season for sure. But hopefully that helps you as you think about the right target. And you may want to take a look at it just to see if, based on this data from Fidelity, maybe you're in that camp as a boomer, age 59 to 77, where you have a little bit too much exposure to stocks. As the market continues to recover, this would be a good season to adjust that allocation so you take a little bit less risk and position yourself for the bond market to do a good bit better in the days ahead. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to head to the phones and take your questions. We've got some calls coming in right now, but room for your question today on anything financial, whether it's your lifestyle, your spending plan, maybe it's your debt repayment, maybe it's how to give more effectively, or your investments, your long-term savings, whatever it is. The phone line to call is 800-525-7000. Maria, you'll be up first in Texas, and then more of your questions. Again, 800-525-7000. Stick around.
Hi, I'm Matt Ayers, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Do you want to be prepared for ministry at an institution that you can trust? Wesley Biblical Seminary has been training trusted leaders for faithful churches for almost 50 years. In a nation where many denominations and theological institutions are caving to cultural pressure, Wesley Biblical Seminary is standing strong on God's truth. Earn your bachelor's or master's degree to equip you for faithful and fruitful ministry. Learn more at wbs.edu.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
The loss of a child through an abortion affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming, but there is hope and healing in the aftermath. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at EventideInvestments.com. That's EventideInvestments.com.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
If you've listened any length of time, you're aware that we often underscore the importance of preparing for the future. Well, as you look into the future, I suggest you consider the AFA Foundation in your estate planning. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We've got two lines open today for your calls and questions, 800-525-7000. Whatever you're thinking about financially, we'd love to hear from you today. Let's head to Texas. Hi, Maria. Thank you for your call. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so I'll get to the point. I'm 67 years old. I am still working. I have taken part of my investments in the company that I'm currently working in, and I rolled a large portion over it into a money market with the same Fidelity company. All right. And I have an IRA and I have other savings. I am considering to take a portion and purchase gold and silver EFTs to further protect my retirement from the current existing market that is trying to, seems to me, collapse the dollar and are going to a digital currency. I only have a mortgage and I'm paying off the one credit card. My question is, I hope that looks like I'm trying to do the best things to protect my money, because in 2008, when the market crashed, the retirement I had at that time, I lost pretty much all of it. Yeah. All right. So what is your thinking on the gold and silver EFTs? And I was also considering to buy silver coin, again, to further retain the value of some of my monies. Should the dollar collapse with the current Brexit and everything that's going on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thanks for that question, Maria. Let me give you some of my thoughts. First, more generally speaking, you know, I certainly can appreciate what you're saying about the U.S. dollar and what's going on with BRICS and, you know, the move to the gold, or at least they're saying, we'll see if they actually do it, the move to the gold standard and the U.S. dollar being more out of favor, especially geopolitically. But here's the reality. I mean, when we look at where the U.S. dollar fits in the world scene, it would be troubling if there was another currency that could step into the role of the world's reserve currency. But consider that nearly 60% of global currency reserves today are in dollars. The euro is in second place at about 20%, so not even close. And then 90% of all foreign exchange trades involve the U.S. dollar. So with the second stat I'm talking about there, we're not talking about reserves, we're talking about exchange trades ongoing. 90% involve the dollar. So, you know, the global pandemic stimulus response was underpinned by vast currency swaps between the Federal Reserve and friendly U.S. central or friendly central banks around the world. So, you know, ultimately, the U.S. dollar is not going anywhere because there is no reliable alternative on the scene currently. Now, could that change? Yeah, but that's going to be a long way down the road, because keep in mind, you know, anybody else that would be a potential replacement just doesn't have the credibility on the part of the central bank, you know, not to have manipulation of their currency far beyond what, you know, we even have here with the Federal Reserve in terms of quantitative easing and, you know, currency, I mean, interest rate suppression and those types of things. So I don't see the U.S. dollar going anywhere anytime soon. Now, you mentioned digital currency. Yes, there is a concerted effort to explore a U.S. digital dollar. Keep in mind, 90%+ of the world in terms of GDP is considering or evaluating a digital currency. So the idea of a central bank digital currency in the future is certainly plausible, but it's going to take an act of Congress. We know that. It can't be done by the Treasury or the Fed acting alone. And Congress is deeply deeply divided over this issue, and for good reason, because of privacy concerns, because of the ability for social controls. I mean, could there come a day if we had a central bank digital currency and everything ran through the Fed or the Treasury, where they said, you know what, you've exhausted the amount you can spend on fossil fuels this month, we're cutting you off? That's conceivable, and certainly we wouldn't want that, and Congress knows that, and that's why it's important that we show up and vote for people who understand the role of government, and it's actively being debated. And, you know, it would, I think we're still a long way off from seeing that come to pass. So given all of that as a backdrop, how should you then approach your own retirement accounts? Well, you mentioned 2008 and losing all of your retirement, but keep in mind, you know, we go through those cycles and seasons. You know, that one, we did have some systemic problems in our economy and in our banking system with regard to lending. They were dealt with, and the market went to new highs. And so if you didn't do anything during 2008, 2009, and just left your money right where it is, it fully recovered and went to higher ground, which is why we shouldn't try to sell or time the market when we go through a bear market like we went through. And we saw that same thing happen again, you know, post-pandemic. You know, peak to trough, we saw the fastest recovery from that bear market transitioning to a bull market post-pandemic than we've ever seen in history. So, you know, when we look at the precious metals, they have a role. And so I'm not disputing that, Maria. I think you absolutely should have in a properly diversified portfolio an allocation to the precious metals because they are a store of value. They're what you would call a fear trade, usually in a period of unrest or uncertainty. They tend to do well. Now, gold has, you know, has not performed as well as some might have expected recently, just because with a looming recession, that's going to put some pressure on gold when, in terms of people's ability to buy it. And silver in particular, you know, does ebb and flow more than gold. You know, in the last year, silver prices have gone as low as 17 an ounce and up to high, you know, 26 an ounce. So, and over the last decade, silver's vacillated even more than that. It's gone down to 14 and as high as 28. That's a peak to trough difference of over 100%. And that's just in a decade. So there's a lot of volatility there as well. So my conclusion is, let's keep your precious metal allocation to about 10% or less of your portfolio. The data would say, even despite what we're facing today here, Maria, that's going to give you a better long-term result with stocks and bonds and an allocation of the precious metals of about 10% or less. And that can be ETFs or physical precious metals. I want to get your thoughts on all this, so you stay right there. We'll be right back after this break.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit NMLSConsumerAccess.org.
Hannah's Heart, a half-hour program specifically designed to encourage Christian couples walking through infertility and miscarriage.
This is not a show that's going to promise you a certain outcome, but this is a show that says however God answers your cry, we know that He's enough.
Hannah's Heart with Ann Cockrell and Kendra White each Saturday afternoon at 5 Central on American Family Radio. You can find the podcast at AFR.net.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
God's Word is packed with life-changing wisdom about your finances. And FaithFi is here to help you and many others to be wise stewards of God's resources. As a nonprofit organization, we rely on help from FaithFi patrons, supporters of this mission, to help us continue and expand our outreach. Please consider becoming a monthly FaithFi patron. Visit faithfi.com and click Give on the homepage.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We've got one line open, 800-525-7000. Ed, Scott coming your way in just a moment. But first, before the break, we were talking to Maria. She was thinking about moving a good bit of her money into silver and or silver and gold through ETFs, exchange-traded funds, essentially tracking baskets that track the price of those precious metals, and perhaps through some silver coins, just because of what's been going on with the markets, her experience in 2008, her comments around what's happening with the U.S. dollar and the U.S. economy. Maria, I threw a lot at you there just with my thoughts about not overweighting in the precious metals because of their volatility, the fact that a digital currency is still, the potential for it is still a long way off, and the U.S. dollar really not having any, you know, suitable replacements for a world reserve currency anytime soon. But give me your thoughts on all that.
Well, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I was looking at the fact that they've passed FedNow started here in July.
Yeah.
Then they are passing more monetary rules that are saying laying the ground rate for the digital currency. And the whole point of that, I agree, it will be to take away our freedoms and our privacy in every aspect. Yeah. And that also that more countries are signing on to BRICS at this time and working, and more countries are beginning to trade in other currencies, some gold, some silver, and some in the Chinese yen. Okay, so I agree that it could be a long way off based on the numbers you provided. So I agreed more than 10%, don't too much in. So the money market, if you think, is that a good idea, that I rolled some of my a large portion into the money market, which is gaining 4.25% interest at this time.
I mean, the challenge is I don't want you, I realize it's it's opportune right now in the sense that, yes, that's a very attractive rate at 4.2 on a money market. You can get 5.5 in a CD and, you know, we're excited about that, but that's temporary. And the only thing I want you to be careful of is my preference would always be for you to get the right allocation for your investments that's appropriate for your age, your risk tolerance, and your income needs, and then leave it there. Because, you know, just because rates go up right now, you know, you selling out of the market is going to, you know, cause you to miss the recovery for that portion that should remain in stocks. So is there any problem with you having a portion in money market? No, and I like that rate. But again, let's not do it just, you know, move an excessive amount there just because rates are high, given that that's temporary and it's going to cause you to miss out on the recovery of the market. So what I would prefer to do is to step back and say, what's the right allocation to stocks percentage-wise for your total investable assets? Maybe it's 30%, maybe it's 40%, maybe it's 20%. You've got to decide. What's the right allocation to precious metals? Maybe it's 10%. What's the right allocation to high-quality corporate and government bonds that, by the way, are going to do very well as rates start to come down later this year or next year? Maybe that's 50% or 60%. And then let's leave that there using money market just for that cash portion that maybe you're going to be drawing down in the next 6 months and enjoying that 4% plus yield on that. But let's not try to time the market and move an excessive amount to the money market, because that's just going to mess with your overall investment returns, because you don't know when the market, and I don't either, know when the market's going to recover fully. We didn't expect the strength that we've seen in the stock market year to date this year. I would have never thought that the stock market would be, you know, sitting where it is right now with the Dow Jones at nearly 36,000, with most economists thinking we're heading into a recession. Does that make sense?
I did really good with that. And I did, so I'll put, I might have moved a little too much. I have left a good portion in the stock market, but I think I moved more than 50%. I moved about 50% into the money market, and half is still in stocks and bonds in my end of a retirement vehicle. But I have another question. I only have $28,000 left on my mortgage.
Yeah.
Should I continue? And I do need to buy a car. I didn't want to invest in buying anything with that high, you know, a car, expenses of a car, and that includes insurance. Again, at this age and this point and this economy, but I also was thinking, should I pay off the $28,000 on my mortgage, or should I be focusing again on savings and building income through savings and adding, just continuing to build in the mind?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. Let me answer this one quickly, and then I've got to get to some other callers. Are you still working, Maria?
I am still working.
So what I would do is, let's prioritize saving, unless you just have an absolute conviction to be debt-free from the Lord. And then if you do, go for it. If not, let's try to time the payoff of that mortgage for when you're entering retirement. So figure out how many years you have left on your mortgage. If that's going to extend beyond your retirement date, then let's figure out how much you need to send extra per year in order to align the payoff of the mortgage with retirement or sooner. And let's put that amount toward the mortgage, but prioritize saving, you know, over that, if that makes sense. Hey, thanks for your call today. We appreciate you being on the program. 800-525-7000 is the number to call to Pennsylvania. Ed, thanks for your patience, sir. Go ahead.
All right. I just had a quick question for you. I have a son that's going to be starting his sophomore year in college, and we did have some money set aside in the 529 savings account.
Okay.
But we did use that up. And I was wondering, I do have some mutual funds sitting on the back burner, and I was wondering if I should be cashing those out in an attempt to use those for his college tuition.
Yeah, so this is money earmarked for his college, is that right, in these mutual funds?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you're planning on using this money in the next, you know, 24 months between now and graduation, then I would just look at what's the right timing to move out of those investments in light of what's been going on in the market as of late. You know, you'll know whether you're still down a good bit from, you know, the highs that you had, you know, over a year ago, or whether you've recovered most of it. If you've recovered most of it, you might want to go ahead and start moving out of that, if not move all of it out and go ahead and, you know, just protect it and get, you know, 5.5%, you know, in CDs, just so the money is available when you need it and you're earning some interest on it in the meantime. And if we were to hit into a recession and retest our last October lows, you know, you're not, you know, participating in that, because given the fact that you've got, you know, a need for this money in the next 24 months, you really shouldn't be in the market, because we have no idea whether the market will go up or down on a 1 to 2 year basis. We need to look long term, but you don't have long term with this money. So I would say look for an opportune exit point and then shore it up and just maximize the yield while you protect it while you're waiting. There's really no benefit to you to put it in the 529, because you're out of the growth phase and into the distribution phase, which means you won't enjoy the benefit of that tax-free growth that you would have had if you put it in, you know, a decade ago. And as long as you use it for qualified educational expenses, you're just not going to get that benefit now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess my other question is, should I just be pulling out a little bit at a time and letting the market hopefully continue to grow and make more money?
Well, it's just challenging because nobody knows. I don't know. You don't know. Economists don't know where the market's headed from here, right? I mean, are we going to skirt by the recession and this market continues to grow and we're going to have that soft landing the Fed was hoping for? Maybe. Are we going to head into a recession and, you know, it's going to be a little deeper than we thought, even though inflation's coming down, but we still have some, you know, real implications to this fast rise in the interest rates. Because of the uncertainty, I'd be more inclined to you beginning to exit over the next 3 months. Thanks for your call. A quick break, back with Bob Dahl and more of your questions right around the corner. Stay with us.
Sandy Rios 24/7. It's not a morning show, it's an all-day show, fueled by the wit and wisdom of Sandy Rios.
If you have a smartphone, I think you should download the AFR app.
Sandy Rios 24/7 is on the podcast page at AFR.net.
I have, you know, so many listeners from the radio show who are now listening to the podcast.
Sandy Rios 24/7.
You live my prayers all the time.
Sandy Rios 24/7 on the podcast page at AFR.net.
I love AFR. You say it's on the radio too?
Here at American Family Radio, we know that many people find their audio entertainment in other places than the radio. So our programming is available with the AFR app on Apple and Android devices, through Amazon Alexa, and now available on Roku.
I just love the podcasts.
That too. American Family Radio, streaming or podcast, now available wherever you are. And we're on the radio.
Have you downloaded the Faith Fi app yet? You need to do that today, because this is going to make your life easier. Yes, you can manage your money through the in-app envelope feature, but also plan out future goals. I want to buy a house in 5 years, and I'm on track to do that. Here's also what I like. You can connect with people around the country. It's like social media, but better. Ask a question, get an answer, and share what you're learning about money and investing. So why don't you grab your phone right now and download the Faith Fi app?
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Bob Dahl coming up in just a moment. He stops by each Monday with his market commentary. He's Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments and a Wall Street veteran. We always appreciate Bob's biblical perspective on the markets and the economy each Monday. But first, Scott, you've been waiting patiently for quite a while now, so I wanted to get your call in first. You go right ahead there in Illinois. Scott, are you with us? All right. Looks like we're having a little trouble getting Scott on the line. Let me try one more time. Scott, are you there? Okay, no problem. Let's head to Bob Dahl. Bob joins us each Monday. Bob, good morning to you, sir.
Happy Monday, Mr. West.
It's good to hear your voice, my friend. Still a lot of green on my board here. I guess you've got a much bigger board than me. So how are stocks opening up to start the week?
Yeah, I'd say two-thirds to three-quarters on the green side. Continuation of good news last week and the week before, and it seems like a long list of weeks, Rob. The market's done just so well and better than almost anybody thought.
Yeah. How has that played out just in your own investing, Bob, on behalf of your clients? Have you all had still more powder dry than you would have wished given this strength, or have you been able to participate?
So we've been able to participate, but not to the degree the market has, simply because we've not had enough of those mega cap growth stocks. We own them, but not in enough size to keep up with how important they are in the benchmarks. Some of these stocks, I mean, I'm looking at Apple is 6% of the S&P 500. Microsoft is almost 6. And then you have Google and Visa. You know, a lot of big names have done so well.
Yeah.
As we've talked about before, it was entirely the mega cap stocks for the first 5 months of this year. June, July, things have broadened out a bit.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, Bob, what about last week's data? I mean, it's surprising to see inflation perhaps coming down as more quickly than we expected, still pretty good on the corporate earnings front. What did you make of last week's news?
Yeah, generally good news. The earnings, let's start there, have been less bad than expected. Through last Friday, earnings are expected, with what's reported and to be reported, to be down about 6.5% for the quarter. That was as much as 8% at its worst, so a little better than expected. The problem is earnings estimates going forward have hardly changed. For full year 23, they're up $1 from where they were at the start of this quarter. For 2024, they're down $1. So analysts have not made a whole lot of moves despite these earnings. In terms of the inflation numbers in the Fed, yes, inflation, we got a pretty good reading last week, continuing the trend, and we probably have at least a couple of more. And then it gets tougher. I mean, think about oil, Rob.
Yeah.
Oil was in the 60s not that long ago. I'm looking at my screen. It's $85. Mm-hmm. These are the kinds of things that are going to cause, in our view, inflation to be lower than where it's been recently, but not low enough to satisfy the Fed. The odds of the Fed raising rates again at their next meeting is roughly 50%. So flip a coin. Who knows? They're
yes.
data dependent, and they will tell us that until we get to that next meeting.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Bob, we've had a couple of questions as of late about the U.S. dollar. You and I have talked about this before. Obviously, last month there was some news out from BRICS that they had finally settled on using the gold standard. Now, I guess it remains to be seen whether they'll actually make good on that. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually do it. But what does that mean longer term for the U.S. dollar? And we still recognize that 90% of trades are in the U.S. dollar, 60% of global reserves are still in the U.S. dollar, so it's not going anywhere anytime soon, but should we be more concerned?
I don't think we should be concerned that the dollar is going to be replaced as the reserve currency of the world, but I think we should be concerned about the value of the dollar relative to other currencies. Under most of our measurements, the dollar is overvalued. Now, that doesn't mean it has to come down. It does mean there's risk should fundamentals get in the way. As the Fed kept raising rates earlier this year, the dollar, having weakened late last year, got stronger again. Our guess is from here to the end of the year, next 6 months or so, the dollar will have some more weakness.
All right, very good. Bob, let's finish with the possibility of a recession. What do you think, just based on everything you know today, about the possibility of that soft landing the Fed has been hoping for versus really slipping into that recession?
So the consensus, let's start there, is continuing to push a recession out in time or totally eliminate it from the equation. Call me stubborn, I'm still of the view that all those lead indicators that we keep talking about, the yield curve, the leading economic indicators, et cetera, they're all suggesting that the economy at best is going to have some weakness and at worst will experience a mild recession. So I still think it's there, but we've said all along, as you recall, Rob, commencing sometime between Labor Day and the end of the year. So if that's accurate, we'll still see weakness, but we got a little time to go here.
Very good. Bob, always appreciate your insights, my friend.
My pleasure.
Folks, you can learn more about Bob Dahl and Crossmark Global Investments at crossmarkglobal.com. By the way, while you're there, sign up for his weekly investment commentary called Dahl's Deliberation and check out on the products tab the mutual funds he manages. We always appreciate Bob's insights. All right, let's round out the program today. Headed back to the phone. Scott, let's try your call again and see if we can get you on the line. Are you there?
Hi, yes, I am.
Very good. Thank you so much for your patience today. I'm delighted to help you. What's on your mind?
Same to you. So I'm in a little bit of a pickle. Got some debt and currently work two jobs. And I just feel like with the recession and one of my jobs is selling vehicles and it's not the market that it was. And the other job is pretty set. I've tried to move up, but it's not going forward. And just wanted to know what my next best steps are to kind of get out of that hole.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, challenging. And I realize living within your means is easier said than done, especially when expenses are all up and income is down. And, you know, that's really the only two things you've got there. We got to try to cut expenses and or increase income or both. And, you know, neither of those are simple. What is the shortfall on a monthly basis, Scott, that you're experiencing?
Well, the past couple of months, it's been about $1,000 to $2,000. Lack of. So.
And that's not insignificant. Have you looked at the option of trying to get that income up? Is there, I mean, you're already working two jobs. Is there an opportunity to replace one of them? If you know, you mentioned the car business being challenging right now, and it certainly is with high interest rates. Yeah. Cars are expensive. People are kind of delaying a lot of those purchases, hoping for a better environment. That's resulting in you know, less car sales. Have you looked at perhaps moving to another industry? Any potential job prospects on the horizon?
Yeah, I really have to give it more. I've just kind of been overwhelmed with everything and don't know where to start. So I've been with the one company over 13 years, and I've tried to move up multiple times. And I think the last time they said it took 2 months, and then they didn't hire somebody in the interim just because of cost. And like I said, I would love to stay there. I've accrued some good vacation time. It's a nice place, but I just don't see any openings. And I think it's just, I've got to put the foot to the pedal to the metal at this point and kind of see.
I think so. Yeah, certainly you don't want to take on a bunch of debt to, you know, to fund this shortfall. I mean, obviously we want to look at the big three. Those are usually the most significant: food, housing, and transportation. We may need to make a change there. You may need to bring in a roommate. You may need to sell a car. Certainly look at, you know, eliminating all eating out. I think beyond that, you know, we add utilities to that, and then everything else is on the table to be cut or, you know, eliminated or reduced. So we've got to get serious about getting your spending down. And I think you need to really make it a priority to try to look for something that's going to pay you a bit more. Listen, I'd love to help you try to get through this. And you've said a couple of times, I just don't know where to go from here. And maybe having somebody come alongside you to give you a plan is just what you've been missing. So you stay on the line. We're going to get your information. I'm going to have one of our certified Christian financial counselors reach out to you. There won't be any cost to you. We'll cover the cost. But this person will meet with you by phone or by video meeting, look at your budget with you if you're open to it, give you some fresh ideas, maybe help you get a plan together, and maybe that will help you break through just your indecisiveness, your inability to see the path forward, which often prevents you from taking action. Maybe if you've got a plan, that'll give you the incentive you need, you know, to get this turned around and going in the right direction. So stay on the line. We'll get your information. We'll have somebody get in touch with you and let us know how that turns out. We'll be praying for you, Scott. God bless you. To Louisiana. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I am looking at selling some J.P. Morgan stock. Parents gave it to me years ago. I know it's not a very good stock. What it funds.
Sure.
I will be paying a huge amount of capital gain. So, do you think I should just bite the bullet, sell it because of what it, you know, I don't like what it funds, you know, what it supports, and pay the capital gain and be finished with it?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think number one, we want to be aligned with your values, and I think clearly you're not. And number two, we don't want to be highly concentrated in one stock or even, you know, one sector, the banking sector. We need to be properly diversified, which is in Ecclesiastes. And you're now the steward, even though this came to you as an inheritance. And so we want, you know, you to be able to, you know, allow this to reflect your goals and priorities as a steward. The only way you can do that is to get out of it and
deploy it in a properly diversified portfolio. If you need an advisor, a certified Kingdom advisor can help at faithfi.com. But I would agree with you. It's time to get out of this. Thanks so much for calling today. Make sure you check with your CPA on the tax implications. That's going to do it for us. So thankful for Devin, Jim, and Robert. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here as well. Come back and join us tomorrow on Faith and Finance. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.